Austin Film Festival's screenplay competition is currently accepting submissions for 2017. April 20th is the regular deadline, and May 15th is the late deadline. All entrants will receive free reader comments, and advancing writers will be afforded exclusive panels, workshops, and networking opportunities at AFF's annual Screenwriters Conference this October 26th through the 29th, 2017. For more information and to submit, please visit www.austinfilmfestival.com. From Austin Film Festival, this is a special edition of the On Story Podcast. In partnership with the Academy Education and Nickel Fellowships programs, Austin Film Festival presented Launching Your Writing Career on Saturday, April 8th, 2017 at the Academy's beautiful Linwood Dunn Theater in Hollywood. This podcast includes highlights from the first panel discussion called How to Break In, Becoming a Working Writer, featuring writers who have utilized their recognition from the Austin Film Festival Screenplay Competition and the Academy Nickel Fellowships in Screenwriting to become working writers. Panelists included Nickel Fellows Michael Wurry and Alicia Brophy, AFF winner Wes Brown, and AFF finalist Jimmy Mosqueda. The panel was moderated by AFF Screenplay Competition Director Matt D. The event began with a few words from Greg Beal, the director of the Nickel Fellowships in Screenwriting.
The Academy and the Austin Film Festival have had a long-standing collaboration. I was there in 1994, the first year of the festival, so it's been fun to have done that and to have gone back many times since. Frank Pearson, I believe, is the keynote speaker that year. He was also at the time, I think, the Guild president, Writers Guild president, and later became the Academy president and was also a Nickel Fellowship committee member. Dan Petrie, who's hosting this afternoon's reception, was a longtime member of the Nickel committee, also has been to Austin many, many times, and was a former Writers Guild president. So it's been nice to have those kind of connections, too. Many of the writers who attend Austin have been judges for us in the semifinal rounds of our competition over the year, and a number of our committee members have also been there many times. So it's been a great collaboration for all of these years, and it's terrific to be able to do this, in this room for the second time. And I forget, is it your fourth, fifth time coming out and doing Austin in L.A.?
Fourth, I think.
And we've worked with them on the first two, too, but it's been even nicer to have them here at the Dunn.
All right. Welcome, everyone, to Launching Your Writing Career. This first panel is called How to Break In, Becoming a Working Writer. So before we get started, I want to start off with a disclaimer that, as William Goldman famously stated, nobody knows anything. But what the writers who are speaking today, what they are going to talk about, and the experiences that they have to share with all of you, is that they are a testament that you can be a working writer, that you can share your stories, that it is possible. So at AFF, what we try to instill to all the writers who attend the festival and submit their scripts is that we want to instill that sense of inspiration and hope, because sometimes it feels hopeless when you're working on your scripts in isolation by yourself and maybe you don't have the avenues that other people might have. So hopefully you can find something that may be applicable to your own writing and your own experience, and that you'll find your own path to becoming a working writer. So with that said, I would like to introduce our panelists here. To my left is Michael Wurry. He is a Nickel Fellow from 2012. Wes Brown is a winner from 2014, the AMC-sponsored one-hour pilot category. Alicia Brophy, she is a 2014 Nickel Fellow. And we have Jimmy Mosqueda, who is a 2015 comedy finalist. So everybody, please welcome our panel. So if each of you could take a quick moment to talk about your background and what you were doing professionally before you actually broke in or had your first writing gig.
My name is Michael. I moved out here in 1999, go to college, and went to USC. I did not study screenwriting, but I had the intention of graduating and taking a bartending job so that I could write for however many years it would take to start a career. At the time, I thought it'd be about 3 to 5 years, kind of like a grad school time frame I gave myself, and it ended up being almost 10 years that I worked as a bartender to pay the bills. I wrote a lot of bad scripts. You know, I made kind of some progress in the competitions over that span of time, but it was about 9 years and 10 months, I think, that it took for me to get out of the bar and into professional writing.
I was a lawyer. I had a very patient wife after we decided to make a change in our careers, and she said I had always told her that I wanted to write. So I took a brief break from the practice of law. That was what she thought it was going to be. And it turned out to be 10 years, about the same amount of time, doing some legal work here and there before that. I didn't actually do the contest thing. I quit at one point, just gave up in despair, and then that didn't really work. I woke up one morning and I was like, I couldn't taste my breakfast, and I was like, I think I have to go back to writing. So at a certain point, after showing my stuff around through a friend who was represented, and that getting nowhere, he said, why don't you submit to the Austin? You've never done any of the contests, so why don't you take this and submit it to that? And that was 2014. I submitted a pilot and a feature script to Austin, and the pilot won the AMC
1 hour
category, 1 hour pilot category, and everything happened for me after that.
I grew up in a small town, and I actually didn't even like watch movies or anything. This wasn't my trajectory. After high school, I ran away with a carnival, and I did all these like crazy gypsy lifestyle moves, and eventually settled in, went to Berkeley for English, and then went back to a gypsy lifestyle. And I just got it in my head. I had this story I wanted to tell. And I wrote it in like 3 days, and it was as bad as you would expect someone that doesn't know what they're doing, writing a script in 3 days. But then I spent like 2 years trying to read everything I could and educate myself and rewrite it. And that script got me into UT Austin for their grad screenwriting program. And I fell in love with everything about screenwriting. So after I graduated, I stayed and taught screenwriting at UT and was really happy, except for the fact that I hadn't really actually tested myself here in LA yet. So I gave up the great job and, you know, feeling like I was doing something, and moved to LA. And my job here was an assistant slash housekeeper. So I went from holding office hours to cleaning toilets, that was my life for a while. And then I have a co-writer, and we would submit consistently every year to the Nickel. And 1 year we quarterfinaled, and the next year we semifinaled, and then the next year we won, and that changed our lives.
Yeah, it's funny that you guys kind of took about 10 years to, you know, get your career rolling, because that's about the same amount of time it took me. I moved to LA after college in 2007, and I moved and I was like, oh, you know, I have 10,000 in the bank, like that's gonna float me for a while, and then I'll just get a writing job and I'll be good, right? You know, cut to 3 months later, I'm moving back home with my parents, licking my wounds a little bit, and trying to be a little bit smarter about my plan. So what I did was I actually went back to school, and I worked as an editor. Because as an editor, you can actually get paid for your skills pretty quickly as opposed to writing. So working in post-production, and I was also writing on the side. And then through my post-production work, I kind of went into the advertising side, and I switched to copywriting. So I was copywriting for a while. But it really wasn't, I mean, I was kind of seduced by that lifestyle. And I kind of came to a point where I needed to decide, like, okay, am I really going to be a writer, like a screenwriter, or am I going to kind of continue on this path? And kind of once I made myself to like make a decision, that's when I wrote the very next script that I wrote after that was Valedictorian. And that's the script that I submitted to the Austin Film Festival. And here's a funny thing. I submitted it the first year, but I put it in the wrong category because I was an idiot. I put it in the drama category. Even though it's like not a drama at all, it's a comedy, and I didn't even get past the first round. I don't think, you know. So you know, when you are writing, you're submitting to Austin or whatever you're submitting to, make sure you're checking the right box. That's a great lesson. Second time, then next year, submitted into the comedy category, and then I made the finals, and then that's kind of what got me going.
So I think it would be helpful for everybody out here to be familiar with the scripts that you were acknowledged with at AFF or The Nickel. So Michael, you had Extremely Wicked. Wes, you had Ascension. Alicia, you had United States of Awesome. Great title, by the way. And Jimmy, you had Valedictorian. So if each of you could quickly summarize a script or provide the log line for it, and then if you could also add what was distinctive about it for people, what they loved about it.
So my script is called Extremely Wicked, Shockingly Evil and Vile, and it is based on a true story about this young law student who gets pulled over on a traffic violation. It snowballs into these horrific murder accusations. He goes to jail, he escapes from jail twice, and he ends up defending himself on death row in this nationally televised trial. And I think the reason why it was so well received is because it has a major kind of Kaiser Soze twist in it, but that's kind of an unintended side effect of writing it. It's actually what I've heard from all the meetings that I kind of still take off of it is that it causes people to really feel kind of disgust with themselves as far as how they've related to the main character, because it's told in this tone that seduces you into what becomes kind of a con man like story. And this was something that I didn't set out to have this intention when I was writing the script. And you kind of learn a lot about your own work when you hear other people feed it back to you. And I think it just caused a very visceral emotional reaction in people who read it. And that's kind of rare when you read something these days. So I think that's kind of what the magic was about it.
Ascension is a drama pilot. It's a period piece. It's set, it begins in a couple of years before the Civil War. And it's set on a Louisiana sugar plantation, so it's a slavery story. I think what probably hooked people in about it was that while my ultimate intent is to paint kind of is for it to be an ensemble story and for it to be kind of a prism for this community, and it's a large, these sugar plantations were large places. There would be probably 300 and 400 slaves on a lot of them. For this large community to kind of serve as a prism through which you see all of the upheavals of the antebellum period and the Civil War and after through this one, the lens of this one community. I think what excited people about it in terms of it as a pilot was how the main character, sort of the avenue into the story, was that he was an abolitionist from Philadelphia, who's the estranged son of the plantation owner. So after his father and brother are murdered by their slaves, this abolitionist inherits the plantation, goes down to Louisiana to take it over with the intention of freeing the slaves, but then finds that everything is complicated from the financial state of the place to the laws and the situation with his family, so that this person ends up kind of almost immediately becoming compromised and having to take over the plantation to try to run it, to try to save it, to try to free people, and everything becomes immensely complicated very quickly.
Mine is a period piece also. United States of Awesome. It was a feature set on the night of July 3rd, 1776. Benjamin Franklin, Jefferson, Washington are out celebrating, finishing having written the Declaration of Independence, get a little too drunk. Franklin ends up at a poorhouse, and the Declaration is stolen, and they have 24 hours to find it, or there will not be an America. And along the way, you learn the things like that in history, like how bifocals were invented and all that. And people, I think, reacted to it because you always see the founding fathers like halls of presidents, and they're up on these, you know, there's monuments to them. And we were like, no, they're just a bunch of bros. And so we just wrote it, you know, with like almost like a Danny McBride type feel, and gave them character arcs and had fun with them. And we had gone to the library and taken out fifth grade level children's books about the American Revolution and used that as a litmus test for jokes. Because we're like, well, history isn't fun if you don't actually get the reference. And so I think people reacted to it because everyone, no matter they're history nerds or not, like gets it. And so, yeah, we're still getting meetings off of that script. No one's making it, but we're still getting meetings off of it.
Valedictorian, it's set in high school, and it's about a teenage girl, a really ambitious teenage girl, who really wants to be the valedictorian of her high school. And she goes to this really competitive school where everybody's like a shark. She realizes the only way she's going to win is if she kills everybody that stands in her way. So that's the premise. So it's a bit, you know, it's a, like Mean Girls, but like meaner girls, like a little bit of Election. And what's funny about that is it's actually the very first comedy that I ever wrote. Before that, I was writing a lot of horror and thriller. I think the reason why this story, it resonated first with me. Like, it was the story that every day I woke up, I couldn't wait to write. And that's just because it's a story that was inspired by my own high school experience, you know, with all the murder. No, I'm joking. But, you know, it's like, I was part of this group that was like super competitive. And I just remember like thinking that was my entire life. Like if I didn't get an A, I would die, right? And I just kind of took that and just made it literal. Again, like just going back to this idea of like being excited about what you're writing about. And even though it was a comedy and it could not be anything but a comedy, it was the story really and the characters that resonated with me. And I think that's what resonates with a lot of people because everybody has been to high school. You know, everybody knows of a situation, especially in Hollywood, where they're all sharks here, you know, and it might be like low key about it, but everybody's out to kind of backstab one another in this weird way. And so it really resonates with executives, you know, so it's so funny. Like they really love it. It's you want this history to be familiar to everybody. So everybody gets it. So speaking like universal truths about our culture, about our experiences, about who we are as people, like if that's not in your script, no matter what genre you're writing in, you know, it's just not going to be sticky in that way.
So then what happened next?
It's funny because when you're at Austin and when you're at that semifinal round, that's usually when things, you know, start to happen. Like people will reach out to you. You know, I had a manager reach out to me even before I went to the festival and meet with me before I went to the festival because they wanted to, you know, obviously try to lock you in before anyone else can. Same with like, you know, some executives, people who have read you at the semifinal round, because I think everybody at the semifinal round is like a, you know, somebody that works in the industry, right? After Austin, that led to me working with the Sundance Institute. And that led to a couple other opportunities. And again, it's just like, it becomes like this like a snowball effect. And I would say it almost took like a year before it really started like kicking in and things started happening at a much quicker rate. So I would definitely say like things happen quickly, but don't worry if they settle after, like, just be patient, you know, keep writing.
Just to tell what my particular experience was, I had a brief period right after Austin where you remember how I said that I was showing Ascension to my friend who had a manager? That script was on that manager's desk for 6 weeks when I gave up on it. Then after Austin, after I had all these other people coming after me, that manager called me and it was really awkward. I had a meeting with the guy who had it sitting on his desk for 6 weeks and never had read it, who I would have said yes to at any moment up until all of this happened. Now I had to say no to, which was a little great and awkward. And but mainly the reason that I went with the manager that I did, these guys really, really, really wanted to see my show on the air. And that's what sold me on them. Like a month later, a lot of things just fell right into place. A new former studio head moved to their company and we pitched it to him to produce and he loved it. And then a couple of months after that, he won the Oscar for Best Picture. And so after about, once again, the same as you were saying, about a year later, about a year after the Austin win, a little bit less than that, my managers got me an agent, and I landed on a show at AMC, partly because of the relationship I had with Carrie and Erica coming out of Austin, and now I'm working on Fear of the Walking Dead.
And for those of you not aware, AMC is a sponsor of the AFF 1 Hour Pilot Competition, and AMC handpicks their semifinalists, finalists, and their winners. So they review all the top scripts. So something to consider. It seems like 10 years is the uh, the amount of time that it might take, maybe sooner. And on this panel, we have a bartender, a lawyer, a gypsy, and a film editor. So a wide variety of experience before you guys actually broke through or had that moment. But specifically to that moment, what was the turning point for you in your writing?
The Nickel, I wasn't aware of this at the time, but I was told I had entered it 29 times over 10 years. And I mean, if you want to boil it down to one professional moment, I mean, it was becoming a finalist in the Nickel, where it was literally overnight that the script went all over the place and people were reading it. And it was like about a month between the finalist announcement and the fellowship announcement that, you know, everything had kind of been laid in place at that point as far as signing and taking meetings and the whole process getting started. I mean, so that's kind of the professional moment. But if I look back at like where the writing took a turn, it's a little more subtle than that. There's not like one particular instance, but I can tell you that the scripts that have done the most for me creatively, personally, and professionally have all been things that at the time I was certain were the worst use of my time, because they were small, in-between genre, character-driven pieces that would never get me signed, would never sell in a bidding war, would never get bought by a studio. But because I felt so passionate about what I was writing about, those scripts came out very, very good. One got me my first manager, one won the Nickel, and my first job, which is also a very small, independent drama, maybe the first thing that's going forward to production. So like the lesson that I learned is passion about what you're writing about is much more important than, you know, trying to outguess the market. Because anytime I try to do that, I'm not excited about going to work each day. It feels more like a job. And I think the writing suffers in the end.
Alicia?
I was in a very lucky position, which was a very close friend of mine, my writer's group, had won the Nickel a couple years before me. I had actually gone like as his friend date and was in the audience. So I had gone to see your Nickel year play out before I had my Nickel year. And that really helped, because I saw how there's this very small amount of time where you are on fire, and then there's the next group, and you need to just take advantage of that. So my co-writer and I, Scott, were like, Nickel year, we're not sleeping. And we went on, you know, probably like 100 meetings. We had a meeting with Brownstone, which is Elizabeth Banks' company. And it was lovely. It was just a lunch with an exec, and it was just how they always are. And at the very end of the meeting, she mentioned, oh, you know, we do have this adaptation of this book, White Girl Problems, and we're looking for a new writer on it, but it's happening fast. We're like hiring someone next week. So you would have to read the book over the weekend, have a take, be able to come in a week. And we're like, yeah, sure. She didn't know that I was being evicted and I was in the process of moving. And Scott was, my co-writer, was living on a camping cot in an empty room in the house while this was happening. So we're like, sure. And we somehow, in the process of the move, read the book, came up with a take. And the book was all about a rich white girl in Beverly Hills with a shopping addiction. And I'm like from some little town, and Scott's from East Texas. And I was like, can you really? Oh, can you really? And I'm like, what if it's an action comedy? And so we're like, if we get the job, great, we're writing something we want to. And if we don't get the job, at least we're not writing about a rich girl with a shopping addiction in Beverly Hills. So we just went in with this crazy take, thinking there's no way we have a chance. And we like pitch, you know, what if it was, you know, Taken? So we do this whole crazy thing, and the exec is like, I love it. I don't know if Elizabeth Banks is going to go for it, but I love it. So we come back, and she's like, I love it. I don't know if the studio is going to go for it, but I love it. And so then she takes us to the studio, and this was our first time getting to that level. We had pitched at production levels and never made it past that. So we go into Lionsgate, and we knew it was like a dissertation. You go in, you pitch for, you know, 25 minutes, and then they ask you a million questions that pokes holes in all the logic, and you realize you're not going to get the job. And so we sit at this huge table. It's literally like the size of this square here, you know, and the execs are on the other side, and they had ordered us sandwiches. And I, like, we're talking for 30 minutes. We can't eat the sandwich. So they're just sitting there in front of us. And we knew we were up against another writer that was doing a much more adaptation of the book. And we assume, like, for the studio to have let us in the lot, they had to have at least known what we were coming in to talk about. So we launched in, like, what if it's an action comedy? What if? And we, like, see these stairs, and we know within 10 seconds, no one has told them what we were doing. They thought we were coming in, and it was going to be like, it's a rich girl in Beverly Hills with a shopping addiction. And it was just silence. And afterwards, they all, instead of poking all the logic holes, and we know they're there. We know all the places we have not figured out yet. Instead of pointing them out to us, they start pitching each other jokes. And so they just crack each other up for like 10 minutes. And then there's silence. And I just ask, can I go home now? And the drive home, our phone did not stop ringing. Agents, our manager, the execs, the, you know, production company. And we're like, oh, this is what it feels like when things are actually going to happen. So that was it for us. That was our big thing. And it is still in movement now.
All right. So my last question is, how would you describe your voice? Because when we talk about these panels, people always bring up, or at least for agents, managers, producers, they always say, we are looking for an original voice. But what is that? It's so vague. And so can you describe what your voice is? And is it also a matter of style?
I would definitely say my voice is youthful, kind of living in a state of frozen adolescence. I like to write characters that are smart, that are passionate, but they're maybe a little bit demented. So again, and a lot of satire, something that has something to say, I guess, in a weird way, you know, I don't know.
We always describe our voice through quoting others. The creator of Arrested Development said that he likes to make dumb comedy for smart people. And we really love that. We do a lot of comedy, action comedy, usually female protagonists. USFA threw people for a loop because it was a bunch of dudes, but that wasn't our fault. That's just who the founders, or at least who we think the founders are. So we always say that like Lord and Miller are our idols, because it's never like raunch for raunch's sake. It's character arcs, and it's comedy with heart.
If I were to give people advice, and it's advice I try to follow in my own scripts, I try to make them, because I am drawn to material that's difficult. I'm always drawn to sort of serious and what I like to think of as intellectually complex ideas and stories and characters. And therefore, I try to make the script as easy to read as possible. In my action, I try to, I just try to make it read fast, because that's the way people are going to read it. And if you slow people down, they're not having fun. That's what I try to do.
I don't know what my voice is specifically. I don't think a writer can identify their own voice, but I think what it is in general, I put a lot of thought into this. I think it's kind of the sum of every choice that you make in a project, from literally the punctuation to how it like literally falls out, like lays out on the page, to who the characters are, what their point of view is, the responses, the manner of speech, how you write a slug line. I think it's the sum of a million choices that you make. And that comes over months and months, if not years, of working on one project. And I'm a constant rewriter. What I love to do is if I can get through a first draft where it's just big and flabby and messy and there's a lot of just really bad stuff in there, I love nothing more than just stripping it all away and really whittling it down to what the essence is of the story. And it's kind of a back and forth process. I mean, it's growing and then it's shrinking. It's growing and it's shrinking. And each time you add a little bit and subtract a little bit until finally things start to feel right. And it feels fun for you to read and almost feels like an experiential for yourself to read your own work. And if you're starting to get taken away by the story at a certain point, the idea hopefully is that the executive or the producer or the actor will feel that way too. And it's a delicate dance, because, you know, you can get too clever and too cute, and that's just as bad as having no voice at all. And I think just over time, you start to develop a certain objectivity with your own work the best you can. And I think that's, you know, my goal is to make it an enjoyable read for anybody who's reading it, whether it's from the business side or the creative side, because they read so much stuff. And it's not just your scripts. It's books. It's consuming all TV and movies. I mean, I'm amazed at the amount of content like these executives have to consume just to stay apprised of what's out there. So your script doesn't, you don't want that to be the one that drags them down. If there's something in there that makes them crack, like smirk or laugh or something, my agent, before, when he decided to sign me, dropped his iPad when he got to the twist in my script, you know, and he said he had an audible gasp come out of his mouth, you know, which you can't ask for a better compliment than to have like an actual reaction from somebody when they're reading your work. And I don't know how to do that. And again, I don't think it's one moment where you figure out, oh, I can do this thing on page 56 and then it'll change everything. It's the sum total of all the decisions that you put into a project, and that can take years.
On Story is brought to you in part by the Alice Clayburgh Reynolds Foundation, a Texas family providing innovative funding since 1979. This project is supported in part by the Cultural Arts Division of the City of Austin Economic Development Department, the Texas Commission on the Arts, the U.S. Institute of Museum and Library Services, the Texas Library and Archives Commission, and by a grant from Applied Materials. This program is also made possible in part by a grant from Humanities Texas, the state affiliate of the National Endowment for the Humanities. Our executive producer is Barbara Morgan, and the show is produced and edited by myself, Brian Ramos. I do the music for the show as well. Our associate producers are Aaron Halligan, Sonia Onescu, and Maya Perez. Our production coordinator is Katie Stewart, editing help from Jamal Knox. Production assistance from KUT 90.5 in Austin. Go to austinfilmfestival.com to find out more about the Austin Film Festival and conference in October. Until next time, I'm Brian Ramos, and this has been Austin Film Festival's On Story.